Welcome to this episode of the Insights Podcast on the Acadian Broadcasting Network. I'm Don Mills.
And I'm David Campbell.
Our episode today, David, focused on a part of the economy that is more important than most people realize, but lacks a certain profile, I think, with the general population, and that's the ocean that surrounds us in Atlantic Canada. We had Kendra McDonald, the CEO of Canada's Ocean Supercluster, as our guest, who brings a very deep tech background, especially from her time with Deloitte, where she indicated she was the global manager of the auditing of the tech programs around the world, which is kind of a big deal. We learned a lot about what their goals are and what they are trying to achieve. But, she said something that was very interesting. And she used Norway as an example. Norway, they have a very close association with the ocean. And one of the reasons that she speculated that they do compared to Canada, which has a big, relationship with the ocean, but not to the extent that Norway does, is that there's just so many people living on the coast in Norway compared to Canada. And I hadn't thought about that before, but, we are sitting on a big resource that has been underutilized for economic purposes. And she talked about that.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I mean, and if you think about it, she's right. I mean, in Canada, there's really only one large city or urban center that's on the coast, in all due respect to Halifax, but that's Vancouver. Halifax is important, but certainly I think Halifax is, 15th largest urban center in the country or 16th? So it is true that most of our population, most of the centers of power in the country are not on the ocean, compared to Norway, which would be the exact opposite. So that's an interesting observation. But the Ocean Supercluster is trying to put a focus on the opportunity and trying to grow the economic contribution from the ocean sector. And I think it's that side of it is a worthy initiative to try and just raise awareness, try to get people interested in how we can identify opportunities and then work to grow those opportunities for the betterment of society.
Yeah, she also talked about the fact that Canada is only about 50% relative to other ocean countries in terms of taking value from that resource. So we've got a lot of opportunity in that area, obviously. She indicated that the size of the ocean resources in the economy was around, it's close to 40 billion maybe. That's tiny compared to where it is in the world, where it's estimated to be worth $4 trillion globally by 2030. So, we have a lot of room to grow. And there's a lot of various sectors within the ocean that we talked about, including energy, including transportation, including tourism, that could contribute to our economic well-being, plus also in terms of addressing climate issues. So it's a big area of opportunity.
Yeah, and I'm glad they're focused on one of the focus areas is to try and attract foreign companies or foreign investment. And I think A lot of times when we look at initiatives like this, people tend to focus inward and look at their own companies, and that's fine. But you do need to track global, high quality companies into clusters like the ocean sector. I mean, I just last week, Merck & Co. invested $1.75 billion into an aquaculture health company on PEI called Elanco Animal Health. So that's $1.75 billion of investment, which is coming into Canada, or at least leveraging what's going on PEI. So we need to have, global investment. She talked about a partnership with the United Kingdom, looking to attract companies from the UK, even as they look to attract our companies over to Europe. So I think that's a really important focus, making sure we've got our share of global investment into the ocean industries.
Yeah, a couple of other things that are worth noting. I mean, she spent quite a bit of time talking about the how artificial intelligence can really help grow this part of the economy. I hadn't realized that, but she indicated only 25% of the world's oceans have been mapped to date. And eventually they're going to have a digital, what she called a digital twin of the ocean, that would help in the decision-making and the management of oceans. I think that that's an example, I think, of how AI might be important. We also talked about regulatory environment issues as well. Obviously, she said that a lot of her members have concerns about regulatory processes. I mean, we talked about Norway as an example, again, of how they've been able to get ahead of some of these issues in reference to agriculture. And, you know, so there are obviously other jurisdictions that are doing a better job at this. And we need to keep ringing this bell. You know, we need to do better in terms of improving our regulatory processes in Canada, generally speaking.
Absolutely. We need to learn from the best in the world. One of the things you and I have talked about is even with mining and all these other sectors, it seems that the permitting timeline, the environmental assessment timeline, the public consultation timeline takes a lot longer here than some other countries, some best practice countries. So the question is that just a matter of resources or not particularly great processes? But, you know, we need to figure out a way to be able to get these projects approved faster, but still maintain the integrity of the environmental assessment and the community engagement process, because we don't want to reduce that. We want to make sure these are very rigorous in what happens. But it shouldn't take 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years to get projects approved. It just doesn't make sense, even intuitively.
And finally, I just want to mention the Ambition 2035 plan that they've had some involvement in, which has a goal of growing this sector by fivefold by 2035. That's a big ambition, as they say. It's important to Atlantic Canada because currently Atlantic Canada represents not quite half, but close to half of the GDP value of ocean industries. So that could be significant for this region in terms of economic impact.
Yeah, just the last point on that. Sorry, Don, the last point on that, because we talked about that in the Glenn Cook podcast. Globally, aquaculture GDP is rising strongly and it's flatlined in Atlantic Canada. And a lot of that has to do with deep water aquaculture and lots of other things there, but we need to have some ambition. So I'm glad they're at least establishing sort of a baseline ambition for the future, but now we got to make sure we get the investment and get things done to achieve that.
I like the word ambition, don't you? I really like the word ambition. We need more ambition in this region. Absolutely. And so with that rather long introduction, here's our conversation with Kendra MacDonald, the CEO of Canada's Ocean Supercluster. We are pleased to have Kendra MacDonald, the CEO of Canada's Ocean Supercluster, as our guest on the Insights podcast. Kendra, welcome to our podcast.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's begin by finding out more about your background. Can you tell us a little bit about your career path and ending up in your current role here as CEO of Canada's Ocean Supercluster?
Yeah, so I started as a co-op student at Deloitte many years ago. In Ottawa. And very early on, I'm a CPA by background. And I had the opportunity to work a lot with telecommunications companies and technology companies. And through that, I had the opportunity to work in Australia and Hong Kong and in Montreal for a number of years and learned a lot about technology. I was with Deloitte for almost 25 years. I went from audit into IT audit. So I did more in information technology processes and cybersecurity and governance and internal audit. And so about 10 years or so ago, Deloitte started doing a lot of work on the future of Canada. And so they did reports on Canadian productivity and Canadian exporting or lack of exporting. and I think it was 2015, they did a report on the future age of vulnerability and, or age of technology. And what they found was Canadian companies were very vulnerable because they were underinvesting in information technology. And so I got involved in the innovation committee at Deloitte, and I did a lot of work sort of educating companies on the importance of some of the new technologies that were coming. So artificial intelligence and blockchain and robotics and 3D printing and sensors and IoT at the time, Internet of Things. And then I got involved. I wanted to push it in the province. So I became the chair of what was the Newfoundland and Labrador Technology Industry Association, which is now the TechNL, and so, and was acting CEO for them when we went through a transition with that organization. And then through that was introduced to this role, which was another opportunity to really push the importance of technology, and in this case, the importance of technology in the ocean sector. So after almost 25 years at Deloitte, and I was the chief audit executive of Deloitte Global by the time I left, this was an opportunity to really make a difference for the region and for the country. And I took it. So I went from 275,000 employees to one. I was the first official employee of the supercluster. So it's a big change.
So you have been the CEO since its beginning in 2018. Maybe you could help us understand why you made such a big move. What drove you? What motivated you to take on the role of CEO of the supercluster?
Yeah, so when I was approached, so I'd heard a lot about it. So there was a lot of work done. So I came in as the first official CEO of the supercluster, but it was announced in March, and I started in my role at the end of October. So there had been several months of excitement and activity, and even prior to that, in pulling the application together. And so when I researched it further and just saw, you know, the size of the opportunity in the ocean economy and this, what that represented for Canada, what that represented for the region, you know, it, at the end of the day, we're digitalizing the ocean. And so I had been involved in conversations digitalizing media or fintech or many other sectors. And this was a real opportunity to be able to bring technology to the ocean and to be able to lots of traditional industries, to be able to improve productivity, to be able to create new opportunities. And so I decided to take it.
So Canada's Ocean Supercluster was established in 2018 as a catalyst in the growth of the country's ocean economy. The Ocean Supercluster has been given the responsibility for driving the sustainable growth of Canada's ocean economy, often referred to as the blue economy. Can you tell us how the Ocean Supercluster got its start? How was it first established?
Yeah, so that actually does predate me, but there were a group of leaders in Atlantic Canada that got together and said, so let me step back. The innovation strategy for Canada had this idea of superclusters in it, which so was the Innovation Supercluster Initiative at the time. Now it is the Global Innovation Clusters Program. And so that was sort of born out of this idea that we needed industry to invest more in technology and in innovation. And so really trying to tackle the BIRD problem, the business expenditure and research and development. And so there was an application process, and they were really trying to be a bit less Canadian in terms of investing in those places where we really thought we could win. So instead of kind of giving a little bit to everyone, they were going to have no more than five superclusters. And so leaders in Atlantic Canada got together and said, there's a big opportunity here with the ocean economy, obviously a key strength of Atlantic Canada. A couple of things that made it different. One was cross-sectoral. So these leaders were from different sectors. And so, you know, you were really bringing sectors together that had never worked together before. But technology, although it has different flavors, has application and opportunities for many sectors across the ocean economy. And then the program itself required consortium projects. So the projects had to bring multiple companies working together in terms of its model. So it was very collaborative. And so this group was able to bring a team together that put the application together. And ultimately, we were one of the five that were successful and announced in March 2018.
So I want to talk a little bit about the budget for the supercluster and how the organization is funded. Can you give us some background on the current size of the budget and the basis of its funding?
Yeah, so the supercluster or the Global Innovation Cluster program was just refunded. And that was announced, I think it was announced in February of 2023 and kicked in on April 1st. So we have another 5 years of funding, which is $125 million. And then we also were awarded in 2022, $20 million. So that's from ICED. And then we have $20 million through the Pan-Canadian AI strategy, and that's to be spent specifically on commercialization opportunities with AI in the ocean economy. So we are just in, kind of coming up to the almost the end of our first year of the second 5 years. So that's where we are.
Just to be clear, that is money that's coming directly to the ocean supercluster, right?
Yes.
So if I got the numbers right, about $165 million of funding in place currently?
So that's 145, so 125 plus 20.
Okay.
And the intent of the 125 is it unlocks at least that much in industry funding, if not more.
I'm glad you brought that up. So this is really a public-private approach, right?
Yeah. So the program is really trying to reduce the risk of industry investing in innovation. Right. So right. We're basically co-funding with them to help them be able to accelerate their investments in innovation and take less risk themselves.
And so is it kind of a 50-50 match so far, or is that how it's worked out?
So far it's been about 50-50. And the hope would be that in this round we will see more industry investment and less ICED dollars going into each project, which will allow us to stretch further, but also we'll see more industry investment in the projects.
Right. And can you tell us what your current staff complement is? You started as one. Where are you now?
Yeah, so we're a virtual team, and we now have 33 people across 8 provinces.
Yes, and I think that that's another good point to just to emphasize that this is not just an Atlantic Canadian focus, it's Pan-Canada, and obviously with 8 provinces involved, that supports that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a significant opportunity for Atlantic Canadian leadership. But when you look at the size of the opportunity in the ocean economy, I think it'll take the whole country to be able to fully take advantage of it.
So we'd like to find out a little bit about your metrics, like how you measure your performance. You obviously just mentioned once you're trying to leverage private investment dollars in investment. So what are you actually tracking in terms of measures?
Yeah, so we have lots of different measures, and we are continually trying to develop new measures. So there's, I'd say, the straightforward measures. So we have approved over 90 projects. We have, I think, about 300 companies that are involved in those projects. We have over 600 members. We have membership tracked across the country. And then we also did some projections around economic impact towards 20,000 jobs by 2030. And then we have what I would say are a bit trickier, but some of the ecosystem measures. So where are we providing introductions to companies that have never met before? How are we attracting more international investment? We're also looking at, now that our projects are starting to finish, can we capture growth and impact beyond the investments themselves? So, you know, project finishes, but the intent is that it will continue to have revenue growth and be able to drive opportunities based on the investments that we made. So we're looking at how we can do that. And we're also starting to see external measures of the impact of the work that we're doing. So, for example, we work with Startup Genome, and they've had 2 global blue economy reports. Atlantic Canada, I think, was 10th last year in terms of startup ecosystems. We are 8th this year, and then they specifically call out our Ocean Startup Project, which has supported almost 100 companies. So there's some really straightforward things to measure, which are important. There are some harder things, which we're really trying to tackle and be able to measure as well. And now there's some ongoing things. The other thing that's exciting now is we've been around for 5 years, so we can start to track a company that starts with our ideation challenge, can then move into our ocean startup challenge, can move into Creative Destruction Lab Ocean, and then get funding from the supercluster and see how that moves along a continuum. So again, we're just starting to get enough history to be able to do that.
So when do you expect some of that information to become public?
So some of it is, we do report on impacts on our website, and we've just launched a new website. So the intent is that we will continue to build on that. And as our projects are closing, because our first project didn't close until probably about 12 months ago. So as our projects are closing, then we'll be able to report more fulsomely on the first round of funding and be able to carry that forward into the second round as well.
Can we step back a little bit and you give us a sense of just how big the ocean economy is in Canada? How, what scale in terms of, I don't know, GDP, employment, do you have some of those numbers for us?
Yeah, so DFO, Department of Fisheries and Oceans, they publish marine sector information. So the most recent information that I could find was 2020 projections. And so the projections at the Canadian level, $34 billion in GDP and 300,000 jobs. Now that's down from previous years, because obviously that would reflect COVID impacts. And then Atlantic Canada would be $15 billion and about 115,000 jobs of that total. And then if you look at globally, the OECD is projecting that the global ocean economy will be $4 trillion Canadian dollars by 2030. So we're actually quite small. And in fact, the world average contribution to GDP from the ocean economy is about 3.2%. And in Canada, it's about 1.6. So even though we have the longest coastline in the world, we're actually about half the world average in terms of our GDP contribution from the ocean economy to the Canadian economy.
So that's very interesting. Do you mind if we dig a little deeper on that? Like why wouldn't we have similar to the rest? I mean, we have a large fishery. Is it because we don't have the value-added manufacturing, things like shipbuilding and so on? Why do you have any sense of why we're only half the national average or the international average?
So I have some guesses. So I think one of the challenges is a lot of our population does not live on the coast. So we don't necessarily think of ourselves as a marine economy. So when I talk to the ambassador of Norway, for example, in Norway, the bulk of their population is on the ocean, thinking about new technologies and applications in the ocean. We have an awareness problem in Canada in terms of understanding the size of the opportunity and what those jobs look like. So I think that's really important. And if you look at, you know, countries like Iceland and Norway, I think they're the latest numbers, but 35 to 40% of their economy. So you could argue maybe they're not diversified enough, but you can see how they're maximizing the potential of ocean as a resource. You know, half of our coastline is in the Arctic. So again, quite costly, right? Not heavily populated. So the work that it would take to sort of take advantage of some of those opportunities is much more difficult. So anyway, I think those are a few of the reasons. We don't have a lot of value-added processing too. So I think similar to agriculture, we tend to offshore a lot of that processing. And so that is where, if you look at OECD, where a lot of the growth in aquaculture, for example, is going to be, it's going to be in the value-added processing, which right now we're not doing a lot of in Canada, as an example.
So are you looking to sort of shine a light on that and try to attract more investment in the value added?
Yes. So it's one of the places we're trying to attract attention. I think we're also trying to attract attention in terms of the artificial intelligence opportunity and data. So Canada has significant capability when it comes to data and artificial intelligence, but we're not seeing a lot of that. Even with Pan-Canadian AI strategy, it's over $400 million. We've got $20 million coming to Ocean AI. So I think there's a huge opportunity for much more investment so that Canada can bring that capability. We're also looking at blue bioeconomy. So value-added processing is kind of in there, making sure you're maximizing the use of fish waste, microalgae. And if you look at Iceland and their 100% fish waste program and what they've been able to do in terms of increasing the value of fish, We are right now have a steering committee looking at that. What is the size of the opportunity? How do we actually sort of pull things together and be able to take better advantage of that? So anyway, those are a few of the places. So value added is in there in terms of one of the areas where we think there's opportunities for growth.
Could you outline for our listeners the activities that are considered part of the ocean economy? I mean, there may be some surprises in that list, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty long list. So, I mean, stepping back, so the World Bank sort of defines blue economy as sustainable use of ocean resources for economic growth, improved livelihoods and jobs, while also preserving health of ocean ecosystem. So in that definition, you've got basically all things that touch the ocean. So whether that's bioresources, we just talked about some of the bioresources opportunities, you've got traditional fishery, you've got aquaculture, you've got shipping, you've got energy, you've got defense, you've got technology. So we've got tourism, anything that is really touching the ocean. So there's lots, I mean, the ocean covers 70% of the planet. So there is lots of activity, different types of activity on the ocean. And so we cover it all.
Yeah. The Ocean Supercluster recently announced the establishment of Ambition 2035. This is obviously not just your responsibility, but a broader responsibility. But can you talk about what the goal of Ambition 2035 is and the role of the Ocean Supercluster in achieving that goal?
Yeah, so Ambition 2035 was born in 2022 as we were going through the renewal process. And so we really felt that we needed some kind. So I talked about you've got this $4 trillion 2030 number, and then you've got us sitting at now $34 billion. I think it was projected to be $39 for 2019 when we started this work. And that's a pretty big difference. And so we really felt like we needed something to talk about what that economic opportunity was for Canada. And so we did work with our board, and then we traveled across, I think we ended up at four locations between Hurricane and there was a Queen's funeral. Anyway, so we tried to get as much input as we could. And so we looked at it top down and said, does 5x growth feel reasonable? 2030 felt too soon. 2040 felt too late. So we said 2035 felt reasonable. And then we looked bottom up at those DFO categories and said, where do we think the growth opportunities are? Where had there already been work done? So there had been work done around a vision for fisheries and aquaculture, for example. And then we settled on, then we called it an ambition. So it wasn't, there was some economic analysis and rigor in terms of where we thought the growth opportunities were, but it was really meant to create sort of a common story or rallying cry for all those in the ocean economy across Canada to say, hey, this is the size of the opportunity that we are talking about. And so then we were able to write our renewal application and where we were going to focus in the context of Ambition 2035. So our role is really to champion that message, to communicate that message, to raise awareness around the size of the opportunity, and to be able to help others tell that story as well.
And there are four strategic pillars behind Ambition 2035. Can you outline those four pillars for us?
Yeah, so the four pillars are actually where the supercluster is focused within the context of Ambition 2035. So we really said, where can we have impact based on what we've done so far and where the needs are? And so the first is our growth pillar. So that's really our investment pillar, which is core to what we do. And our investments are meant to, grow the ocean economy and strengthen the ecosystem. And then we have the talent, attraction, and retention. And we said, we're not going to grow by 5x unless we get more people and attract more people to jobs. And we talked about the challenge in awareness in terms of people understanding the size of the opportunity and being attracted to the ocean economy. And then network. So we see ourselves and our role as creating a network of networks. So how do we, if you look at clusters, right, it's very hard to create geographical density at a Canadian-wide level. So how do we connect you know, a cove and the Halifax and Nova Scotia ecosystem to the Newfoundland ecosystem, to the Victoria ecosystem, the Vancouver ecosystem, to the Northern Quebec ecosystem, the more that we can do that, then all of Canada, the more that each of those is strong, all of Canada is strong. So a key role in connecting network. And then the last is around ocean brand. So telling a Canadian ocean brand story. We sometimes as Canada go as individual regions. It doesn't not necessarily meaningful to the rest of the world. But when you look at the strength of that story across the Atlantic Canadian region and then across the country more broadly, and being able to put that story together, what Canada is doing is very impressive and of a lot of interest globally. So that's how we came up with our pillars.
Love that last pillar. I'm telling the story is incredibly important. Sometimes mm-hmm. oceans can get lost with all the other sectors that Canada has going. I wanted to ask you about your investment priorities to achieve the goal of growing the blue economy to $220 billion by 2035. You talked a little bit earlier about AI. You also talked about international investment. I think that's incredibly important given that Canada's international investment position has been getting worse in the last 10 years. We're seeing more Canadian companies invest abroad than are investing here. So can you give us a little sense of the investment priorities of the ocean supercluster?
Yeah, so when we looked at where the growth areas were from an Ambition 2035 perspective and where we thought we could have impact, we prioritized, and if you look at our previous priorities, they were more digital focused. This time we wanted to have them be more solutions focused. So transportation, scaled ocean energy, sustainable seafood, and climate solutions are the four. And the intent is that we would invest 80% in those four pillars, but also leave the door open to who knows what the next 5 years will look like if there are other opportunities that emerge. But they're still pretty broad pillars. So, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the kinds of investments or the kinds of projects that you invest in. So there's, as we understand it, there's two types of projects, those that have commercialization outcomes meant to drive economic growth, but the other category is focused on what you talked earlier about ecosystem development, which is very important. Can we start with the ecosystem related projects? Can you tell us how you're investing in the ecosystem and maybe give us a few examples?
Yeah, so I would say overall, to some extent, all of our investments are trying to strengthen the ecosystem. So the stronger the ecosystem is, the more quickly we can build momentum and can grow the ocean economy. So the projects in the ecosystem are really focused on the language of our new strategy on, I would say, the talent, brand, and network pillar. So how do we strengthen those? Because that helps our companies be able to grow. And again, we're not going to grow unless we're able to attract the talent, for example, that we need in the ocean economy. So when you look at, so the way the model works is if you get money for technology leadership, you're expected to contribute a portion of that dollar into the ecosystem activities. And then we use those dollars to fund projects like, so in round one, we had an Indigenous career pivot project. So we worked with an Indigenous working group and they said, one of the challenges we have is it's very difficult to pivot mid-career into a career in oceans. And so that project was developed to be able to tackle that. Ocean Allies is a project that's focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion. If you look at the ocean economy, the several very traditional sectors and not necessarily very diverse, you bring technology into that, also struggles a bit with diversity. So that kind of compounds the problem. And we need growth and we need people. And part of the way to be able to solve that would be to create a more diverse and inclusive workforce. So those are some of the examples. And then, as I mentioned, awareness is either also a piece of that ecosystem. As we've realized more and more, even if there's lots of programs for talent development, for example, if people aren't aware of them, they're being undersubscribed. And we're not necessarily getting the value out of them. So we have increasingly the tools and platforms to be able to raise awareness and increase connection into those programs.
So shifting to commercial outcomes, let's talk about the supercluster's investment portfolio. Let's start by finding out how many different companies and projects you are currently invested in?
Yeah, so we approved over 90 projects with 300 partners. This is an interesting time because our first round of portfolio is coming down and our second round of portfolio is going up. So I'm not sure exactly how many projects are open at the moment, but that's how many projects we've approved and have been underway. I'm sorry, it was another part of that question.
Yeah, no. So can you tell us how much you've invested in those 90 companies so far?
So the super cluster investment in round one was about $150 million, and then that would have been matched by industry.
Right. Yeah, that's a lot of money. Can you give us a couple of examples of the projects that you're funding that maybe have the greatest opportunities for success? That might be hard, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think... So success is probably defined in a few different ways. So... So our first project was Kraken Robotics. So Kraken, since we invested in them, I think they were the first project announced in early 2020. And, they had less than 100 employees when that project was announced. And now they have over 200 and they've been able to secure significant international contracts as a result of our investment in them. So that's exciting and they're continuing to be able to grow. If you look at a GIT, so GIT is Nova Scotia based. They are focused on a graphene coating that goes on a ship that reduces drag and therefore reduces use of diesel. So they're able to save not only in terms of reducing leakage into the water, but also reduce use of fuel consumption, which is good for emissions as well as cost. And I think now, so they were a startup when we funded them, and now their paint is going to 50-ish countries. So they're continuing to grow. So that's exciting. If you look at a company like Subsea Imaging, so I think they're a Newfoundland-based company. And so they wanted to pivot out of oil and gas and diversify. And so they got involved in a project that was looking at precision fishing and aquaculture and using subsea cameras to be able to look at individual fish health and monitoring. So they've been able to successfully pivot into an aquaculture application as a result of their project. And then most recently, InnovaSea is actually, so it's one of our big artificial intelligence projects. And they're actually looking at how to better monitor movement from a hydrodam perspective using computer visioning, which they think will help to speed up the process around regulatory approvals and environmental decision making. So those are a few, and you see different outcomes for each, but all kind of have the power to transform or at least partially transform the industries that they're in.
Yeah, those are good examples. We recently had Glenn Cook on our podcast. Cook Agriculture is the largest privately owned seafood company in the world and the fifth overall salmon farmer. So it's a big company. In fact, he told us that his revenues were $4 billion. So that's a big chunk of what Canada's doing right now, isn't it? When you think about it, mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about it that way. During the podcast, he referenced the difficult regulatory regime in Atlantic Canada, which is a barrier for his company to invest in the region. I want to talk a little bit about what you see are some of the regulatory challenges that your members are seeing. Is there any focus of attention on the regulatory environment from the ocean supercluster?
So regulatory challenges is a common frustration for our companies. So whether that is trying to introduce new technologies and cross-sectoral, so that's not just an aquaculture or fisheries challenge. We hear a lot from a transportation perspective as well. And so our role so far really has been to try to raise awareness. So, for example, at our last event, we had representatives from different government departments and they had a regulatory panel and that gave the opportunity for our companies to be able to ask questions or talk about some of the things that have frustrated them. We've talked about some of that at roundtables as well. We at this point have not, and we've included it. So I think when we did our ambition next steps document, there was also a reference to regulatory. We also, with our projects, try to understand what are some of the regulatory barriers that they're facing, and then try to collate, again, what some of those are to be able to raise awareness. At this point, we've looked at it more at an, is there a regulatory barrier at a sector level that is going to cause a problem, and how do we raise awareness around that? That's as far as we've gotten so far on the regulatory front.
You know, it's amazing. David and I have talked to a variety of sectors, mining, you know, forestry, agriculture. The story is always the same. You know, it's so difficult to get regulatory approvals. And it's costing our economy a lot of money. In fact, it's costing our economy here in this region opportunity. If you look at the tidal power issue, for instance, where Sustain Marine went down because it couldn't outweigh the regulatory process. I mean, that's an example of how it can really interfere with, getting these new things going.
Yeah. So, I mean, some of our projects are really trying to provide better information to accelerate regulatory decision-making. So EDNA Tech, for example, they're in the genomic space, so they do DNA. And so their hope is that by being able to give more precise DNA information on what's happening in the water column, can that eventually expedite some of the regulatory decision-making? That Hydrodam project, I gave an example as well. They think maybe they'll be able to accelerate regulatory decisions in the hydropower space as a result of being able to provide better information. So, trying to find ways to be able to accelerate that process and learn from some of the more innovative regulatory regimes around the world.
So the Ambition 2035 plan talks about the energy sector representing a very large opportunity for the blue economy, specifically talking about hydrogen production. Can you give our listeners an understanding of how hydrogen development is connected to the ocean economy? I mean, of course, a lot of the wind is going to be produced onshore from onshore wind farms.
Yeah, so I mean, that pillar from an energy perspective has a lot in it. And so part of that, in fact, obviously the biggest piece of that, I think energy right now is the biggest contributor to the ocean economy, and it is right now traditionally oil and gas. And when that document was produced, a Beta Nor project was meant to come online as well. So that was a consideration. We didn't expect traditional oil and gas to grow a lot, but there was a bit of growth there. It anticipated that there might be some offshore energy activity, although at that time, I think it also predated Nova Scotia's announcement around offshore energy. So that was a bit of a guess in terms of where that was heading. And so then tidal and wind are also in there as well. And then the hydrogen piece was the marine sector is a big target of hydrogen as an energy fuel source. And if you look at where a lot of innovation will be required, it will be required at ports and on the ships to be able to actually use hydrogen as a fuel source. So that was where that concept of hydrogen came in. And we're continuing to push conversations from a hydrogen perspective. Can Canada be leaders in applications of hydrogen? Because one of the big business cases around production of energy that's not the grid is being able to export it to Europe and others.
Yeah, so we had Peter Nicholson on, who authored that report, Catching the Wind, on offshore wind opportunity in Nova Scotia. He's making the case that we could be an offshore wind powerhouse or a superpower. So you talked about hydrogen for marine transportation, but just wanted to follow up with you on that question about export markets. Do you think there's opportunity to produce the green hydrogen here and then ship it worldwide?
So, I mean, that's what we're hearing. So I think others that are better positioned than me to say whether or not that's actually going to transpire. But to be able to do that, we've got to be able to safely ship it, right? So that's where I think a lot of the innovation opportunity is certainly that we're focused on, is how would we be able to do that? And then also, can we create more business cases for it here so that it's not all just about being able to ship it overseas?
Another opportunity for growth is ocean technology. You spent a bit of time up front talking about technology and the ocean economy. Can you give us a few examples of the opportunities in this sector?
Yeah, so I mean, most of what we invest in would be in technology. So certainly I've probably banged the drum on artificial intelligence, but I do think this is a huge opportunity for Canada. Unfortunately, it's also an opportunity right now where we are leading in research and lagging in adoption. And so how do we get more of our ocean economy as we're going to, I think we're at about 25% of the ocean right now that's been surveyed globally. And the intent is to try to get that to 100% by 2030. So huge amounts of data are going to come our way. And so how do we be leaders in bringing artificial intelligence to the ocean economy? And then another area from a data perspective are what are called digital twins. And so digital twins are sort of virtual replicas of offshore assets that allow you to make more decisions onshore, be more predictive in your decision making, you know, target challenges. We've seen several projects that have applied that to whether it's vessel maintenance or underwater assets or offshore platforms. And so I think that's a big, and they're even talking about as part of, we're in the UN Decade of Ocean, can we create a digital twin of the entire ocean that would allow different levels of data for better decision making and use of our resources, autonomous vessels. So being able to use autonomous vessels a lot in collecting environmental data, and then those autonomous vessels have different levels of sensors that are collecting different types of data. Communication. So communication is a challenge on the ocean. So different types of communication technologies to be able to get more real-time data for better decision-making. And then the whole biotech space, I think I talked about, but I think we'll see more and more coming into more and more opportunities in biotech as we look at, you know, seaweed and carbon sequestration and carbon reduction technologies. So, I could keep going, but there's a few.
Those are a few good examples. Again, part of the Ambition 2035 plan is to grow marine transportation to 25 billion, I believe. Can you give us, some idea what the opportunities are in marine transportation?
Yeah, so this has been an area actually where we've seen a fair amount of activity over the last 5 years as well in decarbonization of shipping. And this is a place where regulation is pushing hard on decarbonization of shipping and marine transportation. So we've got electrification projects that are trying to increase battery size for longer distances on bigger ships, hybridization, so diesel engine with electric and being able to move back and forth. We've seen, I mentioned the GIT and the coatings project. We also have an alternative, or they call themselves a transitionary fuel, so it's actually a fuel additive that goes into diesel it reduces the diesel content, but also the gases and emissions, and then alternative fuels. And as you move forward, and we talked about hydrogen, that whole space of alternative fuels and hydrogen, potentially fuel cells on ships would be an area. And I think we're seeing anti-fouling. There's all kinds of examples of other technologies that are coming into the transportation space where Canada is playing a role.
You talked earlier about how climate change was part of your mandate. We'd like to find out a little bit more about that. Of course, global temperatures are changing the ocean environment. Fish habitat is changing and fish are migrating to colder waters, things like that. Can you give us a sense of what your priorities are when it comes to climate change?
Yeah, so we have a climate change pillar. Canada also has called the Ocean Protection Plan. So our focus is on commercial solutions. Having said that, I think there are many opportunities for commercial solutions as countries and companies will struggle with being able to tackle climate change. So one example is in the coastal resiliency. So there's opportunities to use, for example, satellite data to be able to monitor coasts and be able to identify soft spots. AI can also be used as we get better data to be able to predict what could happen. So that can allow us to make different decisions around infrastructure. It can also hopefully give us a sense of what's coming sooner. So maybe we're able to be able to protect ourselves differently. We're seeing lots of technology, particularly with the autonomous ships and sensors. One of the big applications is being able to collect environmental data. And I think with Ocean Frontier Institute and their climate action funding, which was announced last year, so one of the things we're trying to do is make sure that as that research progresses, it has a place to land so that we're actually able to commercialize that research, maybe through some of the work of the supercluster. So, yeah.
Shifting gears a bit, I wanted to ask you what you think the best opportunities are in the region to grow ocean tourism and recreational opportunities.
Yeah, so ocean tourism is an interesting one, I think, because when you look at OECD, I think ocean tourism is about 25-ish% of that pie and is expected to continue to be a similar size as you go out to 2030. There was no doubt when we looked at the numbers that we were undersized in terms of ocean tourism. And I think the UN decade or the high level panel on sustainability said ocean tourism is about half of all tourism globally. So having said that, it's less, and I'm not an expert in tourism, but it is less a technology problem. And so there are other investments in terms of, identifying the right assets and infrastructure investments, et cetera, that would help us, I think, take advantage of that opportunity. I was just in Iqaluit. And so, on the one hand, you want to increase tourism. On the other hand, there's all kinds of environmental considerations and the ability of individual communities to be able to absorb the tourists. So I think, I think it's a big opportunity, but I think it will be dealt with by others and hopefully we'll be able to grow it in a sustainable way.
We've had Melanie Nadeau, the CEO of Cove, on our podcast, and she referenced working with the Ocean Supercluster. Can you clarify the relationship between the two organizations?
Yeah, so I think I mentioned we see ourselves really as this network of networks. So they are one of the key nodes, I would say, in terms of that network. So whether it's Cove, there's the Pier, which is focused more on marine transportation innovation at the Port of Halifax. You've got the Launch, which is out in Holyrood in Newfoundland. You've got, heading out of Atlantic Canada, you've got Rimouski and Novarium as another key hub. And then you've got Coast, which is the Center for Ocean Applied Sustainable Technology, out in Victoria, Vancouver Maritime Center for Climate, which is in Vancouver. And so we have Cove has been, so Cove, several of their tenants and are supported by the supercluster. They've got supercluster projects. Cove themselves has been involved with some of the supercluster projects more on the talent development side. So they've been involved with our ecosystem projects. So, and, they're part of any of the activities that we do, and they're a member of the supercluster, and we also are a tenant of Cove. So it's, quite a connected relationship in terms of our role in theirs.
So just, again, for clarification purposes, you're helping fund some of their activities.
So we don't fund Cove directly. No. We fund their companies, right? So yeah, several of their companies are involved in supercluster projects.
Okay, that's how it works. So can you give us a few examples of maybe the ocean startups from Cove that perhaps you're most excited about in terms of being able to be scalable? Because that's always the big challenge, right?
Yeah, and they're not necessarily all they're not necessarily all startups. I think some of the projects that we've seen, certainly with companies at Cove, so SensorTech, for example, who are in acoustics, and they're continuing to grow. They just celebrated their 40-year anniversary, so they're not a startup. Kraken, I talked about, so they also are at Cove with their synthetic aperture sonar, so they're continuing to grow. Onica is a relatively new company, and so they are out of Quebec, but they also have a presence at Cove, and they're focused on wave-powered desalination. So they're really trying to push that. Glass Ocean, they were actually a startup winner for a couple of years, and they're focused on electric boats. So you know, there's lots of them there, but there's a few.
One, just as an aside, I don't know if you're seeing this, but I'd like you to comment on it. We've spoken to most of the major accelerators and incubators across the region, and one of the common themes that are coming out of those discussions is that a lot of the startups are driven by newcomers to the country, immigrants. Is this something that you're seeing as well?
So I don't know from an ocean specific perspective. So wearing my previous hat when I was involved with TechNL, we are seeing the same thing. And I've heard that as a result of they actually have trouble getting jobs, so they end up starting companies, maybe some cultural differences, but that is something that I have heard in the Newfoundland ecosystem as well.
Kendra, just one last question here. It's been a very insightful interview on what the supercluster is doing, but looking ahead, what are you excited about? What are sort of the biggest opportunities that you see in the pipeline that should come to fruition in the very near future? What's the most exciting sort of big scale stuff that's happening right now in the region?
Yeah, so I think so. Lots of things excite me. Certainly, the conversation around renewable energy. I think that's very exciting. I think our ability to be able to move that quickly, to get people working together, to engage stakeholders. I really hope that we do it right, because I just think it's a tremendous opportunity for the region. I've hit on AI, but I need to hit on it again. We have DeepSense here from an ocean AI perspective, so that's a tremendous asset in terms of the knowledge and capability that we have here. The whole artificial intelligence conversation is moving very, very quickly, and Canada has incredible strengths. So I would hope that we're seeing it being embraced. We've just launched a second call in the artificial intelligence space. We've never done kind of the same topic twice in a year, but it is just moving so quickly with the conversations around generative AI as an example. I think we're seeing sort of more and more activity. So in terms of what Cove is doing, Ocean Frontier Institute is now moving into their sort of second year, first full year of their climate action activities. We now have the launch up and running, you know, the piers up and running. I think the momentum that those are building will continue to build off each other. I think we're seeing more international interest. So certainly with the UK, you've got the accelerator that's at Cove. You've got us doing a first co-investment with the UK. So we haven't done that before, where they will invest in the UK portion and we'll invest in the Canadian portion. I mentioned blue bioeconomy, but we're hoping even just by shining a light on the opportunity that exists in blue bioeconomy, we'll see some increased activity in the next couple of years. Anyway, I'll stop there. But I think I was going to say the sky's the limit. Maybe beyond the ocean is the limit in terms of what the opportunity is here and the size of the opportunity. This is going to, the ocean economy is going to outpace global growth of most of the other sectors in the economy. And Atlantic Canada has tremendous strength. So, you know, we just need to take advantage of it.
Could I just jump in with just one sort of final sort of clarification? We asked about the offshore. The offshore is, according to Peter Nicholson, probably one of the most important opportunities to transform our economy. It's obviously part of the ocean. And one of the big issues that we're talking, we know about this opportunity is that it's going to take an incredible investment to realize the potential. You know, I forget the number that Peter gave us, David, but it was $100 billion was something in that range. And the question is, you know, what role do you see for the ocean supercluster to help realize that enormous potential?
Yeah, so I mean, we have very little money compared to the size of the investment that's going to be required. So we really see our role in terms of a catalyst and a convener. So how do we bring people around the table to be able to have the conversation? How do we keep pushing in terms of the importance of the opportunity. So if you look at, you know, Peter's paper and like we have wind and we've got water and like there's just there's a tremendous opportunity that exists there. But how do we make sure that we don't lose momentum? And how do we make sure that every conversation that I'm having in Ottawa, I'm able to once again raise the opportunity and then get people around the table? So we're also working with Marine Renewables Canada. Obviously, they've got a long history in the space of tidal wave and wind. So how do we make sure that we, you know, work with their strength to be able to continue to really push the conversation as a catalyst and a convener?
Yeah. One of the things that we heard that I hadn't thought about in terms of financing these big projects is, you know, a lot of the equipment, the major equipment comes from European countries, and they have, like, you know, we have Export Canada that helps provide loans to sell our stuff elsewhere in the world. So do the European countries. So there's a way of financing at least the equipment side of things through those kinds of loans. I hadn't thought about that before, but obviously that's a big opportunity in terms of finding the money.
The other thing is the people, right? So how do we build all the expertise that we have in the offshore oil and gas space and be able to demonstrate that we've got the people? Because I think the speed with which we need to scale wind internationally, I think one of the limitations is going to be supply chain and people. And so, you know, how do we help from a supercluster perspective? What we do invest in is innovation. So are there technologies that can be ready for these bigger projects that we can help strengthen supply chain and also help raise awareness in terms of talent and the size of the opportunity?
Right.
Yeah, that's a super point that we've got lots of expertise working in these harsh marine environments, offshore environments from the oil and gas sector that could be applied to the wind energy sector. Obviously, one of the reasons why the wind is so good out there is because it's so windy, which makes it a harsh environment. So a little tapped an obvious moment there. Kendra, thank you so much for joining us today on the Insights Podcast, providing an overview of the ocean supercluster and the opportunity represented by the blue economy, especially here in our region. We wish you every success and we'll continue to monitor and follow your progress with great interest.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Insights Podcast from the Acadia Broadcasting Corporation. Follow the show and listen to past episodes on your favorite podcast platform like Apple or Spotify. If you've enjoyed the show, why not recommend it to a friend? Dawn and David will be back next week with another deep dive into some key issues in Atlantic Canada.